You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 8th of June 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAlbion.com. Well, I want to get into the toppling of the Edward Colston statue today, the lynching and drowning of a statue of a white man, a very altruistic white man, we should add. But before we get into that, I just want to take a look at the BBC reporting on the violent black supremacist mobs that were roaming around the country over the weekend, because it's very illuminating the way that they report on this, and lying by omission, basically. They say a total of 27 police officers were hurt during anti-racism protests in London. The Met Police has revealed 27 police officers injured, and they were sent out in, not in riot gear, but they were just sent out in their normal police officers' uniforms, and they'd been kneeling down in submission to the protesters on the Wednesday. They were also doing it on the Saturday. We've got a police woman with a broken collarbone and a punctured lung, a serious injuries. So I think if we can see that there are 27 police officers that were hurt, these were not peaceful protests, were they? But according to the BBC, they were. Protests on Saturday, sparked by the death of George Floyd, so they have to get that in there as well. This was due to the death of a criminal over the other side of the world. Protests on Saturday were largely peaceful, but were marred later by disturbances outside Downing Street. Just disturbances, not serious injuries to the police then. One demonstrator who was not at Downing Street saw officers acting very aggressively elsewhere. So they have to get in there that, it's the police officers' fault. They were acting aggressive. The majority of Saturday's protests were peaceful, but in the evening there were disturbances outside Downing Street. Once again, they tell us, just to hammer this point home, that these were peaceful protests. They weren't violent mobs. BBC Home Affairs correspondent Tom Simmons said the protest was largely over when missiles and fireworks were thrown at a police line. And you can see the video of that. It's packed. There are hundreds of people there firing missiles at the police. Again, the same police who were taking a knee, kneeling in submission to the mob earlier during the day. There are videos of the police running away, having to run away from the mob that were chasing them. It's like a scene from the Keystone Cops. None of them in riot gear, of course, where they've been told that these are the good guys. They're not going to be violent. They're protesting police violence. Two officers were seriously injured, including a mounted branch officer who was knocked from a horse when it hit a set of traffic lights while appearing to bolt. The officer had struggled to stay in control as she was riding down the street, surrounded by protesters. So they tell us there that it was the police officer's fault. She couldn't stay in control as she was riding down the street. No mention there of the push bike that was thrown at the horse, the bottles that were thrown at the horses. The reason why this horse bolted was because of the activities of the black supremacists. And yes, there were some white people among them, which is absolutely shameful behaviour, really shameful behaviour. If they weren't there, it would just be so obvious to the world, the truth about this, that this is just the way that blacks behave when something happens that they don't like. And this whole narrative of this being extreme police violence against blacks, it just doesn't happen. I think it was something like 12 blacks have died in police custody in the last 30 years in the Metropolitan Police. They have all these programs to go after people just for criticizing blacks, let alone people being violent towards them. Five times as many of them are in prison than their percentage of the population, because they are five times more likely to commit crime. Therefore, they are five times more likely to be arrested by the police, and they're going to be five times more likely to resist arrest. And yet we don't see five times as many of them coming to some kind of an injury by the police trying to arrest them. The main problem that they have is that they will always try to resist arrest. And if you're talking about America as well, in 99% of cases where somebody black is actually shot by the police, they are armed. They are not unarmed. And that 1%, I guess, you've got to shoot first and ask questions later if you are concerned for your life, basically, when you're trying to arrest somebody that statistics tell you is going to be far more likely to fight back. But to get again to the point here, the BBC are basically alleging that it was this police officer's fault. She struggled to stay in control as she was riding down the street. Not the protesters were throwing missiles at her. I mean, to throw a push bike at a horse, just incredible. They continue, but Asia Ahmed, an activist who attended several of the protests, said, "These situations don't come from nowhere." She told the BBC she had seen the police acting very aggressively towards protesters. Miss Ahmed, who was not at Downing Street during the disturbance, said, "A lot of people she spoke to feared for their lives when they saw the police horses. I don't think that was the best tactic to use if you're trying to create a peaceful environment," she said. Is throwing push bikes and bottles at the police, is that a good tactic to use to create a peaceful environment? How do you think those police felt with all these missiles being thrown at them? It's to say that the protesters feared for their lives when they saw police horses. It's quite obvious what the BBC is doing here. They are enemies of the state. They are enemies of the people. They're enemies of the state. They're enemies to the police. They just continuously want to push this progressive liberal ideology. They continually want to push this anti-white ideology that holds up black people as completely innocent and can never be blamed for anything. They can never be in the wrong. And this is just sickening to see the way that they are covering up for the mob violence here. And it continued. Later on in the day, we saw Winston Churchill's statue. That was defaced. It had Churchill is a racist painted on it. We saw the cenotaph. There were people swinging from the flags on that. Somebody trying to set fire to a flag there. It had Black Lives Matter that was graffitied on it. And then, of course, we got the lynching of the Edward Colston statue in Bristol. The lynching of a statue and then throwing the statue into the sea. What do you think these people are going to do when once they've finished with the statues? Who do you think they're going to be lynching then? I mean, they're supposed to be a minority of the people in this country, and look at the way they behave. What are they even doing here? Why have we even got people from Africa here complaining about the oppression that they feel in our country? We didn't bring them over here. It's not the situation that we have in America, where slaves went to America and then when they were freed, they refused to go back home again. What we've got here, we've got black people that freely chose to come here and then complain that they're oppressed when they're here, and that all our statues of our great men of our past, they all have to be pulled down. All our people have to be replaced in Parliament. All our teachers have to be replaced because for some unknown reason we have to have a diverse teaching system. They're complaining in Ireland at the moment that they don't have enough blacks in the teaching system. Possibly one of the reasons why we don't have many blacks in the teaching system is because they have an average IQ of 85. But getting back to this Edward Colston statue that they decided to lynch, let's have a little look at who Edward Colston was, first off. And this comes from Wikipedia. Edward Colston became a merchant, initially trading in wine, fruits, and cloth, not slaves, and mainly in Spain, Portugal, and other European ports. So that's where his wealth came from, trading in wine, fruits, and cloth. He then became deputy governor in the Royal African Company in 1689 for just 1 year. He was the deputy governor just for 1 year. Wikipedia tells us it is uncertain exactly how much of his wealth stemmed from the slave trade, though there is no doubt that he was heavily involved in it. Well, he was working with this Royal African Company for longer than that, but he was only the governor for 1 year. And if they are talking about we have to desecrate Edward Colston's statue because he was involved in the Royal African Company, well, what about the other people that were involved in it? That company was actually set up by King Charles II and his brother, the Duke of York, the later King James II. So these people, they hate Edward Colston. Do they hate our kings of our past as well? Are they going to destroy the statues of them? The later King James II, who was the governor of the company, together with the City of London merchants, and it had many notable investors, including John Locke, the English philosopher and physician. Are they going to go after John Locke as well? Widely regarded as one of the most influential of the Enlightenment thinkers, and commonly known as the father of liberalism, although he later changed his stance on the slave trade, and the diarist Samuel Pepys. And if it wasn't for people like Locke promoting liberalism, we wouldn't even be in the situation that we are in today. The man should be a hero to the black mob. But because he was involved in the so-called slave trade, which was really just management of human resources, they wished to destroy all memory of him. Colston used his wealth to support and endow schools, hospitals, almshouses, and churches in Bristol, London, and elsewhere. And an endowment is where you invest money so that that amount that you have invested doesn't go down. It makes money. And the money that is made from that investment then finances another endeavour, basically. So all the schools and the hospitals, almshouses and churches in Bristol, London and elsewhere that he funded, that's in perpetuity. They will always get that money. They will always be paid for from the original investment that he made, this endowment that he made. So this man is a huge philanthropist. He must have given away most of his wealth in trying to improve the lives of the British people. It's like Cecil Rhodes, who gave away loads of his money not just to try and improve British people's lives or South Africans' lives. He came out with the Rhodes Foundation, which is available to people from any race. And now the black recipients of the Rhodes Foundation have formed this movement, Rhodes Must Fall, and they did the same to the Rhodes statue, the Cecil Rhodes statue. They lynched that in South Africa and are trying to do the same here. What is happening in South Africa is the fate of all multicultural countries. That is the fate of white people if we don't do something about this. In Bristol, Colston founded almshouses in King Street and Colston's Almshouses on St. Michael's Hill. He endowed Queen Elizabeth's Hospital School and helped found Colston's Hospital, a boarding school which opened in 1710, leaving an endowment to be managed by the Society of Merchant Venturers for its upkeep. He gave money to schools in Temple, one of which went on to become St. Mary Redcliffe and Temple School. Well, why is it called that? Why is it not named after Edward Colston? And if they're going to change the name of the school, are they going to give back the endowment? And he also gave money to other parts of Bristol and to several churches and the cathedral. He was a strong Tory and high churchman and was returned as Member of Parliament for Bristol in 1710 for just one parliament. So this is a very important person for Bristol. It may be that Bristol would not be such a successful city if it wasn't for the investment that this man had put into it. And he's talking about helping the poor here as well, with these almshouses that he has set up and these schools that he has funded. David Hewson, writing in 1808, described Colston as the great benefactor of the city of Bristol, who in his lifetime expended more than 70,000 florins, which they say is pounds here, in charitable institutions. Now that must have been an absolute fortune back then. During Colston's involvement with the Royal African Company, 1680 to 1692, and don't forget he was only the deputy governor of that for 1 year, it is estimated that the company transported around 84,000 African men, women and children who had been traded as slaves in West Africa, of whom 19,000 died on their journey to the Caribbean and the rest of the Americas. Due to the conditions on many of the vessels, the extended journeys affected the ship's crew mortality rates, which were often similar and sometimes greater than the mortality rates among the slaves. So the crew themselves were actually dying at a greater rate than their cargo. Now, on the BBC today, they've been talking to and interviewing lots of the usual race hustlers. They've had black history professors. They've had the mayor of Bristol, who we will talk about later, and other black journalists. And they've been going on about how there were 20,000 children that he stole from Africa. He hunted down these black children and just threw them off the side of the boat. I mean, why on earth would you be transporting children as slaves? Why on earth would you be doing that? You would have to wait, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years before they could actually be strong enough to do any work, to actually work on a farm. And I mean, it even tells us here that they had been traded as slaves in West Africa. He wasn't hunting these people down. He was buying them from the African chiefs because that was the main commerce that existed in Africa, was slaves. Yes, some of these African tribes did go into the interior and they did kidnap other Africans that they sold in the slave markets. But just as many of these Africans were actually sold themselves. They sold themselves as slaves so that their family could have the money for them. And when they went to America, and these were the luckiest Africans that have ever existed that went to America. The proof of that is that when they were freed, they didn't go back to Africa, did they? They stayed in America. They could have gone back to Africa. America set up Liberia for them, set up a state with law and order, with the same constitution as America, so they could have gone back to their homeland and they could have had all the benefits that they had in America. And none of them went. And they didn't go because, as I say, they were the luckiest Africans in the whole of history. The fate of the African slaves in Africa would have been to be beaten when they died. They would have been killed alongside their master. They could have been eaten in times of famine. When they were taken to America, they were clothed, they were fed. There were laws in place which said that if you owned a slave, you had to look after them. You had to give them a pension. You had to look after their health. You had to pay for any children that they had. And these slave owners, they paid £10,000 for a slave. £10,000. It's not like they were just taking these people and it didn't matter if they were injured or if they died or anything like that. I mean, that was a big investment. £10,000 in today's money to buy one of these slaves. And if you're going to spend that sort of money on, say, a car, you're not then going to willfully damage the car, are you? It was in their best interest to look after these people. And what was the work that they were doing? Working on a farm. Working on a farm. People pay today to go on holidays working on farms. The Jews have this thing called a kibbutz, which is the equivalent of working on a farm. People go and join the kibbutz and they work and they learn about the way farming works. Is that really such a horror to be working on a farm? And Do they really think that these ship owners, they didn't care if they lost their valuable cargo like that? They did all they could to ensure that the slaves managed to make it all the way to America. Because if they lost a certain number of them, then the trip wouldn't have been worth the money. The business venture wouldn't have been worth the money. The owners of the ships would rather that their own crew died than the cargo. And when you see that picture that's supposedly of the slave ship and they're all lying there squashed in together in the hold of the ship, That's not reality. That's an imagined drawing of what it may have looked like. It didn't look like that. There was a big gap in the middle there. They had the slaves around the outside, and then there was a big gap in the middle. Because if you had lots of people squashed in together like that, you would get a lot of people dying. And according to this Wikipedia here, they say that 19,000 died on their journey. Well, you can safely say that 19,000 crew would have died on that journey as well then. More. Because it tells us that the mortality rate of the crew was sometimes greater than the mortality rate among the slaves. At the same time, you had white children that were being shoved up chimneys. When they were complaining about slavery in Parliament, there was criticism by well-known authors that they were blind to what was actually going on in Britain, where they had 7 and 8 year old white children being shoved up chimneys. And they weren't being paid for it. They were being given all these dangerous jobs to do, whereas Africans that were over there in America were working on farms. They weren't being shoved up chimneys. Also, at this time, you had the Highland clearances, where Scots were just kidnapped and thrown on a boat and taken off to America, where they had to suffer indentured servitude, which is exactly the same as being a slave. This is how they cover it up today. They call it indentured servitude, which basically meant that you were owned by a master for 8 years. And at the end of 8 years, you were supposed to be freed. But what they would do is in the last year, the masters would mistreat the indentured servants. So they would try to run away. And if they had run away or broken any of the rules, then by law, they were an indentured servant for another 8 years. Whereas with the slaves that have been paid for, the black slaves, they were theirs for life, so they didn't need to mistreat them and try and get them to break the rules. And the white slaves that were taken from the Highland clearances and also from Ireland and also just from the rural areas of Britain, because just being what was called a villein, where we get the word villain from, which meant living in a village, that was enough of a crime for these slave catchers to kidnap you and send you off to America. When these innocent white rural folk were sent off to America, and they weren't sold for any money because they were told that they had committed some kind of a crime. They would make up a crime. And it was the same with when they were sending prisoners off to Australia. They sent people off over to Australia to build Australia. And it was the same with America. They sent these people off to be indentured servants. And they did make something of themselves. As we see, they built America, they built Australia. We're told today that somehow the black slaves built America. They didn't. They worked on farms, picking cotton. Working on a farm is not a hard life. And when you think about it, today we work, we get paid, and we get enough to, if you're lucky, you get enough to pay your mortgage, which is a roof over your head. You get enough to pay for your clothes, get enough to pay for your food. Maybe you've got a little bit left over for entertainment. Well, these slaves had their housing paid for. They had their clothes paid for. They had their food paid for. They were allowed to keep things that they had made. They were allowed to trade things among one another. It really wasn't that different to employment today. And we had a system of slavery and servitude. We had that for centuries. We had it in Roman times. We had it in Saxon times. In Roman times, if you went to war against somebody and you defeated them, they were slaves, but they would then be made into citizens. At the time, if you got yourself into debt, then, and you couldn't pay the debt, then a way to get rid of the debt was to sell yourself as a slave, and you would work for a certain amount of time, And then you would be a free man. And this was just the system that we had in Africa. They had the system, as I say, of selling themselves as slaves. And they knew that once they had been sold as a slave, they should be looked after. But if it was among these African tribes, they would be mistreated. There would be a chance that they would be eaten. If they were bought by the Arab slave traders, they would castrate the males before they brought them into Arabia. The Arab slave trade goes into the millions of the Africans, the black Africans that they took on the Arab slave trade. And then we also had the fact that these Arabs were coming right into European waters and kidnapping white people and taking them to Tangiers and Tunisia in the slave markets there. The truth about slavery is diametrically opposite to what we have been told. And people need to speak up about this. When you hear these blacks complaining about slavery, we should really point out what happened. And point out, one of the main things I think that we can point out is the fact that it was their own African tribal leaders who sold them. White people weren't going hunting for them in Africa. White people were taking fabrics and gold and tobacco and other items to Africa and exchanging those items for what the Africans had that were of value. And the only things the Africans had that were of value was ivory and slaves. And that was the economy of Africa. It was the economy of Africa for thousands of years. It's only been in the last century that they've tried to put a stop to it. And it was in this millennium, I think it was about 2005 or 2011, something like that, that Mauritius in Africa finally made slavery illegal. And it was white people that put a stop to it. White people that put a stop to the transatlantic slave trade. And yet we're the ones that are blamed for this? Well, let's have a look at what Bristol's mayor has to say about a toppling of Edward Colston's statue. Marvin Rees, the UK's first directly elected black mayor, described the figure of Edward Colston, which was pulled down by Black Lives Matter protesters on Sunday, as a personal affront. He sees this man that is practically responsible for making Bristol what it is today, he sees him as a personal affront. This black mayor wouldn't even be the mayor of a city if it wasn't for Edward Colston making that city what it is. He told BBC Radio 4's Today programme, "I am of Jamaican heritage, and I cannot pretend any real sense of loss for the statue. I cannot pretend it was anything other than a personal affront to me to have it in the middle of Bristol, the city in which I grew up." Well, that city of Bristol is a British city, and that man is a hero to the British people. He's one of our ancestors. And this really does highlight the fact that their enemies, the people they hate, are the heroes of our ancestry and the heroes of our past. You cannot have these people here and peacefully coexist with them when they hate everything about us. As I say, what do we think they're going to do once they've finished lynching the statues? This is before we compare the lynching of the statues to what ISIS did to the statues of white people that were in the Middle East. It's the same thing there that went on there. Mr. Rees said it was an iconic moment that has drawn attention from people across the planet, but added, "My concern, though, is that racism is tackled not just by putting down statues in symbolic moments. It's stitched into the system. It's the systematic exclusion of people from opportunity and power." So he wants to take down the whole system. He's not happy that with this statue being pulled down. He wants to destroy the whole system. And this is what they talk about, the system of whiteness. They basically want to destroy the white race, the golden goose that laid the golden egg for them. Asked if anyone should be charged with criminal damage, he said, "That's up to the criminal justice system." So you've got a blatant crime there. You've got willful damage of public property. And he can't even say that it's a crime. He clearly supports this. And he's the mayor of the city that is practically built with endowments from this great man, from this great philanthropist. He said, "People had been asking for the statue to be removed for a long time," adding, "it's something I would have liked to have seen." And who's been calling for it to be removed? People that have been brainwashed with this slavery nonsense. He says, "If I just pitch up and start tearing down all memorials to slavery, there would be another debate and I would be on the receiving end. I don't have the latitude to operate like that other people would." So he obviously, if he had more power, that's exactly what he would be doing. He would be tearing down the statues of Colston and Churchill and all the other British heroes. Regardless of their history, they are a part of our history. And one of the reasons for this is the teaching of something that is called Black History. Now, we know that blacks never even had a system of writing, so there is no black history. So when you see these people on television and they're saying, we need to have more black history taught in classrooms, what they're talking about is this nonsense slavery narrative. What they're talking about is teaching people lies about our history and claiming that slavery was this terrible torture for blacks, where black babies were just being thrown from boats and evil white supremacists just went into Africa and hunted these poor black children and they put them on these boats and then they threw them off the boats just for no reason. They wanted to kill as many of them as they could on the journey to America, and then they were forced to work on the farm, and they were terribly mistreated by these farmers. I mean, none of it makes sense. It's all completely and utterly illogical, and it's all just talk to them to give them a sense of grievance against us, when we are, in truth, the greatest benefactor of the black race that has ever existed. We've given them medicine, we've given them technology, we've given them communications, we've allowed them to come into our countries, we've even shared our name with them, we've even shared our identity with them to prevent them from having this this sense of somehow being inadequate. And because it's all based on lies, this is where it ends up. Whether we like it or not, we have to face the truth, we have to face up to the facts about race. And if we don't, then we're headed for even worse times than we are in now. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.